This is the NPR News Update. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. Happy Friday the 13th. I'm John Wanamaker. The Twin Cities Somali community is dealing with the latest news from the FBI. The agency tells NPR News that as many as 15 Somali-American young men from the Twin Cities have joined radical groups fighting in Syria's civil war. Laura Ewan reports.
Twin Cities Somali community leaders say the news is yet another wake-up call about disaffected young men who are vulnerable to religious radicalization. The FBI says the travelers are mainly U.S. citizens who grew up and went to high school in Minnesota and fell for propaganda glamorizing the fight to overthrow President Bashar Assad's government in Syria. Mahmoud Noor is executive director of the Confederation of Somali Community in Minnesota. He says the departures are reminiscent of the roughly two dozen Twin Cities men who joined a terror group in Somalia starting in 2007.
And the ideology that takes them to Somalia is the same ideology that takes them to Syria.
Noor is encouraging families and friends of the most recent recruits to share what they know with the FBI. With reporting from Mukhtar Ibrahim, I'm Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Metro Transit says a freight train derailment closed North Star commuter rail service this morning. John Sigvaland is spokesman for Metro Transit.
We got a call early this morning from BNSF that there had been a freight derailment between Ramsey and Elk River, and that there was no rail service that would be operating in that corridor today. So knowing this, we turned our attention to our North Star customers and getting the word out that trains would not be running.
The 16-car derailment happened around 2:15 this morning. All the cars were empty and no one was injured. Metro Transit runs three trips on the North Star line on typical weekends and scheduled an additional trip into Minneapolis tomorrow for the opening of the Green Line light rail service. Sigvaland says his agency will have an update later today on the status of those weekend trains. An administrative law judge says a Minnesota pipeline should be allowed to carry more crude oil from Canada. Elizabeth Dunbar reports.
The Alberta Clipper, or Line 67, crosses northern Minnesota and ends in Superior, Wisconsin. It carries crude oil from Alberta's oil sands. Enbridge owns the pipeline and wants to increase its capacity by 230,000 barrels per day. But environmental groups have fought the proposal, saying the extraction and use of additional oil is contributing to the greenhouse gas emissions linked to climate change. Judge Eric Littman didn't buy that argument. He says demand would continue to rise with or without the pipeline, and that no one came up with a safer, more affordable, and more reliable alternative. He also says the environmental impact of adding several pump stations on the line would be modest and temporary. The Minnesota Public Utilities Commission will make the final decision on the proposal. Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Law enforcement officials in Moorhead say they want more community awareness of sex trafficking. This week, two people were charged with felony sex trafficking of a 13-year-old girl at a Moorhead motel. The criminal complaint says a Moorhead police investigator searched Backpage.com and randomly called the number for the girl. Clay County Attorney Brian Melton says trafficking is a growing problem. He wants to work with local businesses to train employees to spot potential human trafficking.
Talk with the Chamber of Commerce, the hotels, motels that are in the area. It's something they've done pretty well within the Twin Cities area and something that'll, you know, continue to move into this area, I expect, here in the near future.
Melton says Fargo-Moorhead is a convenient stop for sex traffickers moving between the Twin Cities and the North Dakota oil patch. For years, Republicans have been criticizing the federal health care law, and Democrats have been on the defensive. But with the law now in effect and the 2014 election approaching, Democrats are starting to change their rhetoric. They now say the law is making a positive difference in people's lives, and Republican efforts to repeal it will take health insurance away from thousands of Minnesotans. Tom Scheck has more.
Ever since the Affordable Care Act passed in 2010, Republicans have been hammering Democrats over President Obama's signature achievement. Just today, a group called the Minnesota Jobs Coalition, which is working to help Republicans defeat DFL Governor Mark Dayton, announced it will air a TV ad linking Dayton to Minnesota's online health care exchange.
Obamacare has been a disaster, and Mark Dayton's MnSure has made it even worse. But Dayton championed MnSure.
I think it's performed phenomenally well.
Democrats have been forced to play defense on the health care law and on MnSure, as the rollout of the state website led to botched applications and the resignation of MnSure's executive director in December. And it appeared that they would be tight-lipped on the issue throughout the campaign season. But now, Democrats are becoming more aggressive about promoting what they say are the benefits of the program.
I think if the Republicans want to make this an issue, they're going to do so at their own peril.
DFL Party Chair Ken Martin says Democrats aren't going to shy away from the Affordable Care Act, and instead of running away from it, he expects DFL candidates to campaign on it.
I would welcome a debate between the Republicans and the DFL on health care in this state. I think we have a right plan. Thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people now have health insurance that didn't before.
Over the past several weeks, Democrats have ended their self-imposed silence on the law and started campaigning on it. 8th District DFL Congressman Rick Nolan praised the Affordable Care Act as he kicked off his campaign last week.
The Affordable Care Act, all the good things that that has done, including, you know, making insurance, affordable insurance, available for people with pre-existing conditions. I could go through the whole litany of all the good things that it has done.
And Mike Obermueller, who is challenging Republican Congressman John Klein in Minnesota's 2nd District, recently released a video ad criticizing Klein for voting to repeal the law.
For insurance executives, John Klein is music to their ears. Because if Congress repeals Obamacare, insurance companies would go back to charging whatever they want.
A University of Minnesota study released this week found the number of uninsured Minnesotans has fallen by nearly 41% since last October. That is Governor Dayton and DFL Senator Al Franken saying they now intend to campaign on the law, too. Dayton says the outcome is remarkable.
To me, it really confirms the wisdom of the Affordable Care Act and the insurer's part in it. And you know, people have been knocking this the whole time. Really, you now need to look at the facts. This has been tremendously successful, and it's going to get better.
But even though the DFL message has changed, Republicans say they'll keep up their criticism.
The people that think this is going to be a winning issue are either deluding themselves or they're thinking we're stuck with it. We might as well put the best face on it that we can.
Republican State Representative Joe Hoppe of Chaska has been one of the fiercest critics of the health care law in the Minnesota legislature. He says there are still many problems with the law, including people losing their existing coverage, and worries that health insurance costs will rise next year.
I just think for the overwhelming number of Americans and Minnesotans, the Affordable Care Act is going to wind up not being a good thing.
But Democrats say Republicans aren't offering any alternatives to the Affordable Care Act. They believe voters will prefer the existing system over any effort to roll back coverage or repeal the law entirely. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
This is the NPR News Update. We come your way every day around noon. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. The move to all-day kindergarten statewide this fall has many Minnesota school districts working to find new space for students. All-day kindergarten will be free starting this fall thanks to a boost in state funding. In the past, some districts required parents to pay tuition for all-day kindergarten as much as $3,000 a year or more. That meant some parents opted for free half-day programs instead. With that financial barrier lifted, school officials say they need to find room for more kindergartners to spend an entire day in class. Tim Post reports.
School leaders are pleased that Minnesota is going to fund all-day kindergarten. It gives them more time with young students, better preparing them for later grades. But under the old system, many schools were able to put two half-day classes, one in the morning and one in the afternoon, in the same room. This fall, those half-day classes will be all-day classes, causing a space crunch for some already full schools. In the Wayzata School District, where officials say all but one of their seven elementary schools are at capacity, the expected fall rush on all-day classes has one school moving kindergartners down the street.
In our school, we just couldn't accommodate it. We just did not have the space.
Sam Fredrickson is principal at Birchview Elementary in Plymouth. Fredrickson says in the school year that just ended, his building was already full. It had two half-day kindergarten classes in one classroom and a full-day class in another. There was yet another full-day class that had to be moved to a different school. This fall, he's bringing all the kindergarten classes back under one roof, just not Birchview Elementary's. They'll be a block away in their own wing at Central Middle School.
So in other elementary schools, they might have done something like take a computer lab out of a classroom and turn it into a kindergarten classroom. We didn't have those sorts of spaces to give away.
Fredrickson expects kindergarten classes to be back in Birchview in 2 years, once a new elementary school is built and eases space problems throughout the district. In February, voters in the Wayzata School District approved a nearly $110 million referendum. Of that, $36 million will be used to build a new elementary school. A total of 45 districts have gone to voters in the last 18 months seeking property tax money to fund building projects. According to the Minnesota School Boards Association, 36 of them were related to building new schools or classrooms to help ease the expected space crunch caused by a larger crop of all-day kindergarten students. Even though lawmakers gave schools $134 million in funding to pay for all-day kindergarten, that money doesn't help schools that need to add space. Greg Abbott is spokesman for the School Boards Association.
They're getting more money per student. But that's for the educational cost. That didn't include more money for building additions.
In the Moundsview district, school officials are taking a different approach to easing the kindergarten space crunch. A worker with an electric scrubber is giving a tile floor here in the Snail Lake Education Center in Shoreview a good cleaning. It's the first step in preparing the old Snail Lake Elementary School for its new life as a kindergarten center. Some of the classrooms in this building were used for storage in recent years and need a touch-up. Not only will they be cleaned, they'll also be equipped with new smart boards, storage space, and bathrooms, all at kindergartner height. There are administrative offices here as well. They'll stay put, but will end up being surrounded by 14 kindergarten classrooms with 300 students. There's another kindergarten center just like it being prepped in New Brighton.
That's going to be great. We're all really looking forward to it.
That's Moundsview Superintendent Dan Hooverman. Hooverman says in the past, kindergartners would have gone to their neighborhood elementary school. This fall, all of the district's kindergartners will attend school in the new centers, easing the enrollment crunch at elementary schools. The kindergartners will attend their neighborhood schools starting in first grade. Tim Post, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And in other education news, University of Minnesota leaders say they want to encourage more students to live a second year on campus. Alex Friedrich has more on that.
University data indicates that students who stay in residence halls a second year are more likely to graduate than those who don't. Vice Provost Robert McMaster says Ohio State University is among many schools pushing dorm life as a way to boost student performance.
This has become a national trend, and there's a real push to get more students into second-year housing.
Already, close to 20% of students stay for a second year in the dorms at the U. Campus officials are considering raising that to 25% within 2 or 3 years as a short-term goal. They say they have enough beds to handle the increase and are discussing ways they could achieve it. Alex Friedrich, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A pilot program to encourage water conservation practices on Minnesota farms reached a milestone this week. A Red River Valley farming operation is the first to be certified under the Agricultural Water Quality Certification Program. As Dan Gunderson reports, the program rewards farmers who go the extra mile to reduce pollution.
The Nordic Family Farm, about an hour south of Moorhead, hosts this milestone meeting. Officials from the state agriculture department start by reviewing the farmers' conservation practices. Project coordinator Peter Gillitzer explains the process as he walks across the muddy farmyard.
The first step is, like, are you meeting existing standards? And then they go in to above and beyond. So are they doing voluntary practices?
Hop on in.
State and local officials pile into pickup trucks for a tour. The Nordics must prove they're using accepted nutrient management and conservation practices, using and disposing of pesticides properly, planting grassland buffers along public waterways, and they even need to prove the farm's septic system meets standards. Once they're certified, farmers are exempt from new water quality regulations for 10 years, and they move to the top of the list for funding from existing conservation programs. Whiskey Creek runs through the Nordic farm, carrying water to the Red River. The Nordics have restored several spots along the creek where fast-moving water dug deep gullies. They've hauled in tons of rock and created grass-covered berms to reduce erosion. Jared Nordic stops to show a problem area that he wants to fix.
These culverts will move about 296,000 gallons a minute at full capacity, so there's a lot of water moving in.
All that water not only erodes the creek, which is more like a ditch here, but the water also spills out onto farm fields, carrying soil and nutrients back into the stream.
We've got great black dirt out there. We just hate to see that end up in our streams. So by doing this, you know, we're reducing the erosion out in the field.
Jared Nordick says conservation isn't just about doing the right thing for the environment. He says managing water and fertilizer use makes economic sense. Environmental groups have some concerns about the program, but Chris Siegfert, who's water quality director for the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, says it's a good way to reward conservation-minded farmers.
I think that to be certified would mean that an operation is doing a pretty darn good job for water quality.
Siegfert serves on an advisory group for the Ag Water Quality Program. She says it will do a good job at reducing sediment and phosphorus runoff from farmland. But she says it doesn't do enough to fix nitrate pollution, and she doubts enough farmers will sign up.
I don't think we're going to get anything like the widespread participation we would need to meet our major statewide goals that have already been established of a 20% nitrate reduction by 2020. We're going the opposite direction.
Ag Department officials say they'll adjust requirements during the pilot program. Driving down a muddy gravel road, local Soil and Water Conservation District Manager Don Bayumpa agrees getting farmers to participate will be critical, and he will be the key to that effort because he knows the local farmers and their land.
I can specifically say, you know that northwest quarter of Section 11 you got there in Township XYZ? I noticed that you've got a little problem there. And when they know we know, there's the credibility, you know.
At the next stop on the tour, Bayumpa tells Assistant Minnesota Ag Commissioner Matt Woolman he thinks he can sign up 25% of local farmers, but he doubts that can happen in a 3-year pilot project. Woolman says the Ag Department is committed to this effort.
We had to pilot this to kind of get the acceptance and start working out the kinks, but we're looking at this as a long-term effort.
Cool.
You don't change water quality overnight.
No.
Standing on a recently built grass buffer along a ditch, Jared Nordick says he's hopeful his neighbors will notice the work happening on his farm and recognize the economic benefits of conservation. Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Rothsay.
Minnesota music director Osmo Venska says the 2014-15 season released today is designed to reconnect the orchestra with the community after a difficult 2 years. The season includes a host of visiting performers and conductors, as well as the return of well-loved former members of the orchestra. Venska says he hopes public support for the orchestra during the 16-month lockout will mean big audiences during the first full post-dispute season.
Now, I think that everybody has a chance to show how important the orchestra is in this community. It was said so many times by the audience, and now finally we are back. The audience have a chance to come to Orchestra Hall, and I think that it looks good, and it really sounds great.
Venska also announced the orchestra will record the final 3 symphonies in its Sibelius cycle. A previous recording session was postponed because of the lockout. The orchestra won a Grammy for its 2nd disc in the series. And finally, a musical event of a different sort. Morning Edition host Phil Picardi introduces this piece from reporter Dan Olson.
Hundreds of Norwegian-American men will join voices this weekend in Minneapolis. Norwegian men's glee clubs from around the upper Midwest gather for, what else, a singing festival. Einar Johansson has been singing with the Norwegian Glee Club of Minneapolis for more than 60 years. Johansson came to this country because his job prospects in Norway were miserable and life here looked better.
Actually, I have more relatives over here than I have in Norway.
Dan Olson has a new episode of Minnesota Sounds and Voices.
When Einar Johansson was a boy in Norway, he and his 9 brothers and sisters skied to the little 2-room schoolhouse about 3 miles from their farm.
It took us about 5 minutes to get to school on a pair of skis. If you didn't ski in those days, you didn't go anyplace.
Those days were the 1930s and 40s. Johansson says the family raised oats, barley, potatoes, pigs, sheep, and a batch of unruly goats.
They're miserable. They'll eat the shoes off your body.
Johansson was 11 years old as Germany began its devastating occupation of Norway during World War II. After the war, Johansson, trained as a carpenter and furniture maker, took stock of his future. Norway's economy was weak. An aunt who had emigrated to the United States told him there were jobs in Minneapolis and she'd sponsor him. In 1951, he arrived at the Milwaukee Depot in downtown Minneapolis. He was 23 years old.
I came on a boat to New York and took the train from New York. I couldn't speak one word of English.
Johansson found work almost immediately, making fixtures for bars and restaurants. And then he caught on with a crew of home builders. He found a way to become a part of the culture without losing his Norwegian identity, Johansson's boss and the foreman, sang in the Norwegian Glee Club of Minneapolis. There were plenty of other Norwegian-speaking guys in the chorus, and it turned out to be a good way to help Johansson learn English.
Let there be music from the fruited grapes.
Every 2 years, Norwegian glee clubs gather for a song festival. The gathering is in Minneapolis this time. Organizers are expecting more than 200 vocalists from other Upper Midwest clubs.
One pile there, one map, and one of each item, and then that's the last one.
Einar Johansson and Minneapolis chorus members, with supervision from their spouses, pack gift bags for the visiting glee club singers. The Minneapolis Norwegian Men's Glee Club has aged over the years, literally. There are about 40 singers now. The 85-year-old Johansson says the youngest vocalist is in his 60s and a couple are in their 90s. They rehearse once a week.
Fellowship means just about as much as the music nowadays. The music keeps us together.
The Glee Club's bylaws specify half the songs are sung in English and the other half in Norwegian. The men sing hymns and Norwegian folk songs, among many other selections. Johansson is a widower, the father of two daughters, and a grandfather. He isn't a fan of most popular music.
If you know five notes and three words, you can repeat them for half an hour and you make yourself a millionaire.
Einar Johansson is a second tenor and says he feels great and will sing as long as he can. He says singers are a different breed of cat.
Seems like they have a different attitude. I never seen an angry man sing. And if you're a singer, you don't get angry.
Five-year-old Einar Johansson joins with other Norwegian Glee Club singers Saturday night for a performance at Ted Mann Concert Hall in Minneapolis. There'll be an orchestra, soloists, and a mass chorus of more than 200 male voices. Dan Olson is our Minnesota Sounds and Voices reporter. And that's the NPR News Update for Friday, June 13th. I'm John Wanamaker. Thanks for listening.